Okay, my name's John Roskelly, and I'm running for Senate in the 4th District.
I think you probably told me this earlier in July, I think, when we talked, but tell me how you got into the race.
Oh, I looked at the various races and realized that Patton wasn't going to have a opponent right at first. And then as I started to follow it online, he got one, and I thought, as an independent, and I thought, well, I better step in. Not that I thought that it was the best thing in the world, but I hate to see anybody run without some good opposition from independents and Democrats and Republicans. But I just felt it was an opportunity to give two sides of the issue.
Well, you've been successful a couple of times before running for county commissioner. Surely you know that running for office is not an easy thing to do.
No, but, you know, I just feel I've been contacting my legislators, both in the 3rd and the 4th district, over the past few years, and on a variety of issues. And I just feel so strongly that there's so many pressures on these legislators to make votes that aren't take the right path, both Democrats and Republicans. And I just felt like I could get in there and maybe straighten things out a bit and help out on some decisions.
So with all the experience you've had, both in your private endeavors and your public life, what makes you think you'd be a good state senator?
Well, first of all, I know quite a few of the issues that are going through, but my main point is to keep property taxes from being used as a tool to balance this budget that the state has that's way out of whack. I think we're $4 to $5 billion in the hole at this point. The number keeps changing, but I see the legislators looking for a variety of easy outs. And one of those is always the citizens and the seniors and the property taxes and sales taxes. And I want to stop that.
So if you win this office, what are your expectations as to how you'll step in and be a part of the discussion?
Well, I hope to be part of about every discussion in the chamber, of course, but I'd like to be appointed to some key budget and environmental boards, and also just be able to, talk to the governor's office. I know Jay Inslee, as a matter of fact, he's an old climber, and he and I have gotten together several times on various issues, but I'm not always in his same camp. So I think a lot of my issues involve the governor's office, of course, and I have copied them on numerous emails and arguments that I have put forth on bills that shouldn't go forward or should go forward either way. And I just feel like they need an extra push from a senator as opposed to a citizen.
So one of those issues you weighed in on was the 5 commissioner bill that passed that would push Spokane County from 3 county commissioners to 5. You were one of the people who sued to stop that. Can you tell me what your rationale was?
Well, I felt really strongly that the legislature took over the citizens' right to make that decision. In the past, the Spokane citizens have voted that down twice. And for the legislature to take that on and make a special bill pertains to Spokane County, I thought was totally wrong. But also, it's going to cost the citizens, the taxpayers of the county, over $500,000 extra for those 2 more commissioners. And that's an unfunded mandate, which is against state law. Basically, you can't pass a bill that requires a county or a city to pay out money that isn't funded by the state if it's an unfunded mandate. So, and there's a variety of other issues as well that hadn't been really discussed, but I felt pretty strongly. First of all, I don't believe that it takes five commissioners. I mean, what are we creating, another city council? And you know how that goes. Some city councils are pretty compatible. Others argue left and right, and you get some really disturbing people in there. But it's the same with commissioners. I mean, three commissioners, the work, if you just put the time in, the work isn't that bad. When I was a commissioner, we had the Valley and Liberty Lake as part of the county. They weren't cities at that time. And so that added another 100,000 people to our jurisdictions. And, you know, we were able to handle that workload just fine. So I don't know what these, who was pushing the button on this five commissioner bill, but I just didn't agree with it.
So one of the issues that's sort of been percolating, at least from the county's point of view, is the counties don't have that many revenue sources in order to be able to get the money they need to provide the services that their folks expect from them. Would you, as a state senator, work to help the counties figure out other ways to raise money?
Well, I would definitely do that. I don't know at this time how to do that, because right now it's mostly up to property and sales taxes. And I'm not about to allow the counties to, place extra property taxes or sales taxes on citizens when they haven't done their due diligence on cutting expenses. It's a two-way street. Budgeting is cutting expenses and raising revenue, but they have to find other ways, or we do, the state, in allowing these counties to fund their services. But yeah, it's a difficult situation. I don't know what to look for, but I'll certainly try.
So at the state level, I've heard people talk about a wealth tax as a way to raise money to narrow the gap because of the coronavirus. Are you a proponent of any sorts of taxes, or are you mostly a let's cut the spending situation leave the folks alone?
Well, my priority is to allow the state to lose employees through attrition, like retirement or changing jobs. And because salaries and benefits are your highest costs in any kind of government. And then as you start to lower your expenses there, you should look at travel, restrict travel to very, very little, in emergency only, basically. You make your purchases so that they're cost effective. I worked for the state on the Growth Management Hearings Board, and I recall trying to cut the board's budget, and the Office of Financial Management in the state came back and said, if you cut, you won't get the same budget the following year. So we want to keep your budget high. So just in case you need that money. And it's a mindset. It's not, we need to stop that type of mindset and have these department heads and elected officials at the state level line item budget their departments and cut the fat, because there's always fat in government.
Are there areas within the budget, just general categories, that the state should not be spending money? I hear people talk about, we need to eliminate the Department of Education at the federal level. We've heard that for years and years, or this or that. Or are you just talking mostly again about that line item sort of approach?
I think there's some areas like these commissions and boards at the governor's level that need to be either joined together or eliminated. I think we're way over stocked with that kind of thing, and studies as well. I saw one bill that went through last year that failed to pass, but they authorized a $500,000 study off of this, even though the bill failed to pass. So some of those things could be cut. There's, like I said, if you go looking, you're going to be finding things that are that can be stopped, and those funds go elsewhere.
So you talked about Jay Inslee a little while ago. After 7 or 8 months of living in coronavirus world, how has Governor Inslee done?
I think he's done pretty well, and that's because he has mandated masks in certain areas, and he's unfortunately, of course, some of these businesses have had to shut down. And, you know, I sympathize with those business owners completely. I don't own a business, but I can imagine how bad it is for those owners and the employees. But in order to get this under control, I believe in science. And science indicates that you have to mask up and social distance, and that will start to reduce the amount of people who have this virus. So I think Inslee's done a pretty damn good job as far as, trying to get the citizens of the state of Washington so that they follow some regulations and get rid of this virus.
Are there areas that maybe you would have gone a different direction?
I don't think so. I think he's following the science. You can't trust the CDC anymore. So he has to follow the people who really know what they're doing, like Fauci. And I think his name is Redfield. Mm-hmm. But yeah, he has to follow their recommendations because try to keep politics out of it. It's just unfortunate that politics has changed, that has put a wedge between us and the people who don't want to be controlled. So
how would you grade the governor's administration in handling the unemployment fraud situation from back around June and July, when the state essentially lost a few hundred million dollars because of the folks from outside kind of taking advantage of the system?
Do you mean when the federal government stopped the $600?
No, when Nigerian folks were fraudulent claims.
Yeah. I don't know how that happened. I'm glad they got some money back, but I'm sure they feel just as bad as we do that it happened under their watch. That doesn't excuse it. They have to find a way to prevent that thing and that kind of thing in the future. Absolutely. And I think they have got it under control, but that was a terrible, unfortunate circumstances, and I'd have to give them a D on that one.
Yeah. So let's talk about wildfires. We had a pretty easy summer until about Labor Day, and then Mother Nature kind of took over. Hillary Franz is talking about we need a dedicated fund to do more of the wildfire prevention and wildfire suppression. Do you agree that the state needs to spend more money on wildfire mitigation work?
I do. Yeah, I believe that, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure for sure. I think the DNR could partner up with some homeowner insurance companies and proactively speak to these homeowners in wildfire zones to protect their homes. You know, I was a volunteer firefighter for 17 years in Fire District 9. And for quite a few of those years, the DNR seemed to push defensive firefighting around homes. And yet you'd drive around, we'd go to homes on a fire or something, and there would be their firewood stacked up against the house or the barn, trees, big pine trees with their limbs over the roofs of these houses. You know, all those kind of things can be controlled and help prevent these homes from burning down. I think they need to provide some money for forest thinning in highly susceptible areas and create natural fire breaks in some of these areas, especially in the sagebrush and grass country. At a certain time of year, maybe they need to get out, the farmers need to get out and plow strips in various areas to create little fire breaks that will help prevent these large fires. And then I think we need to take a look at the surcharge of liability and property insurance premiums. My wife and I had our insurance raised, almost doubled. No, they canceled us. They wrote us, PEMCO wrote us a letter and said, you know, we're taking you off because of fire danger. And here I live in the, I have no trees around me. I have cultivated land that is mowed down. And so I took all these pictures and sent them into them, and they reinstated us and lowered our rates. But that's maybe that's what will get these homeowners to provide defensive space around their homes and, you know, create livable communities where fire won't just race through them. But that's it.
Yeah, what you're referring to is Hillary Franz's proposal last year for an insurance premium for a... Anyway, so I've heard people this year call wildfires climate fires because they say, you know, as in your case, fire wasn't going to get to my house, and these fires were caused by simply because it was so darn hot and so darn dry. Do you buy into that?
Well, I do buy into the fact that the fuel load dries out as you go further into the summer. This particular year was a bad year, and you could call it a climate year, I suppose, because we didn't get any rain in August, and hardly any in September. So we did have these massive fuel loads, and they're just dry as tinder. And you know, whatever started these fires, whether it was human caused or power lines or lightning, whatever, it just took off. And of course we had these winds come through, and that was you know, very unusual that we had winds coming from the northeast and blowing southwest, which I'm sure created some of those problems. But you know, you look at California, look at Oregon, and you look at Washington, mostly on the north side, east side of the Cascades, and we are susceptible to wildland fire.
One other rural issue I wanted to ask about: how do you think the state has handled wolf interactions with livestock up in northeastern Washington? The state has been shooting wolves in the packs that have been determined to have killed livestock. Is that the right way to go?
No, absolutely not. Almost every wolf that's been killed, all but a few, are due to this one landowner up there in northeast Washington. And he has refused in the past to do a lot of the things that to prevent wolves from taking his cattle. He leases out federal land and runs his cattle up there. And, you know, wolves are going to be wolves. They go after anything that has four legs, and cattle are susceptible to wolves, especially the young ones. But for the Washington State Fish and Game to be determining to kill them because they slaughter a few cattle doesn't seem to make sense. These cattle, they raise them for 18 to 22 months, and then they kill them. And here, wolves, we're trying to bring wolves back into the system, environment, so they could, you know, take down deer and elk that, you know, are usually sick and ill, and finish off carrion that's been laying around. And, you know, and they're an iconic species, but to kill an animal that has taken down a cow that we're going to kill anyway in 22 months seems ridiculous to me. But sure, I think the governor is going to turn that around.
Oh, how so?
Well, the Fish and Game now says they're going to take a whole different approach, and they're going to think of wolves first.
Which you support?
Yes, I do.
Let's talk about police reform. I know I've asked you these questions in the past, but folks haven't heard that other interview. So with the governor's commission thinking about restrictions on chokeholds, maybe bans on tear gas, that sort of thing, is that work best done at the local level or the state level in evaluating police?
Well, certainly the local level should provide an ordinance or regulations for the police department. I don't know how the state's going to do that. They, you know, at the state level, you'd have state police, National Guard, things like that. But I think it would be best if the sheriff's department and the local police forces are subjected to rules and regulations by the local officials. I've sent in numerous emails with suggestions to the city council on, you know, what I thought they should do about protests and how to handle crowds. Not that I'm an expert at it, but it seems like what they're doing, what the local police department and the county sheriff is doing, was used in 25 AD by the Romans, you know, brutalize them. Hasn't been any plans put in place that work. And, you know, you can take care of peaceful protesters fine. But when they start to get out of control, the hoodlums, then you have to get on them hard. And I'm not supportive of anybody who throws things at the police or breaks into buildings or sets fire. They should be taken to court. And as far as I'm concerned, if it's a major felony, they should be put in jail.
The sheriff has talked about, he said, you know, I think I could solve this just by giving me the power to get rid of the bad officers without them bouncing back to me through grievance procedures and that sort of thing. Do you agree with that?
So this would have to do with the officers themselves and what they do to the protesters. Is that what you're asking?
Yeah, I think Ozzy's saying that, you know, the problem lies with my inability to get rid of the bad apples in my squad because of the police guilds and that sort of thing and the power that they do when they fight grievances that might be filed against officers accused of police brutality or whatever.
Well, that's certainly true. I think they need to be held accountable, but he needs to train his officers more sheriff's department. Training would help prevent a lot of these situations with the protesters or anybody else when they respond to an accident or a criminal complaint. But I don't believe it's should be put solely on the union itself. It has to come from the sheriff's department and what they do with their men and how they train them.
All right, I'll finish my part of this by saying you're asking people for their votes, but I'm curious, you as a voter, when you evaluate candidates, what are the things that you look for?
Well, I think candidates should be far more issue-oriented than politically oriented. I think you see that a lot in campaigns. I don't think voters are thinking about independent candidates, especially down ballot. We seem to be too partisan. Voters follow the party line, and really good people with their good ideas and common sense seem to be left out of the mix. So I think we're stuck with Democrats and Republicans who fail to vote the issue. It will also be nice to see candidates with some experience in government, either as a former employee of government or a former elected official, because there is something to be said about hitting the ground running and what can and cannot work. And one of the most important things I think on that is I look for candidates that don't take every dollar from PACs and corporations that come their way. I look at who's contributing to these candidates, and everybody's got a slice of pie they want a vote a certain way. And so they give money to these candidates, and these candidates are compromised. Let's just say Altria, client services, they seem to be handing out money to a variety of candidates because I've checked. And that is the parent company for Philip Morris cigarettes, U.S. smokeless tobacco, Juul vaping products. I mean, why in this day and age is any candidate taking money from a tobacco company? And that just isn't appropriate at all. And yet in the 4th Legislative District, most of the incumbents are taking Altria money. And it's the same with like Chevron or British Petroleum or Tesoro. If you're working on cleaning our air and water as a Democrat, let's say, or climate change, you shouldn't be taking money from oil companies. But it just seems like, you know, these people, you know, they run up these bills. I don't know how they're spending that much money. I've raised a little over $5,000, and I'm not sure I'm going to be able to spend it all. But there are candidates out there, and especially incumbents, who have $75,000 to over $100,000. And what are they doing with it? I don't see any TV ads. They're just raising money for the Democratic Party, basically.
So you're a very independent guy. I've often wondered, you're very conservative fiscally. I've often wondered why you run as a Democrat, maybe rather than as an independent.
I care about the environment. I care about seniors. I care about things that sometimes Republicans don't. I don't take PAC or corporate money, by the way. That's why I'm at $5,000 rather than $100,000. But we just have to stop this influx of money, because you can trace back the money back to a vote of that particular candidate. And it's an obvious conflict of interest. And so one of the qualifications for a good candidate would be, all right, just raise money from individuals and citizens, but not corporate or PAC money.
So, John, I've had my whack at you. Any issues that I missed out on that you wanted to make sure we talked about before we leave?
No, I think I'm pretty comfortable with the questions you've asked. And, you know, I just would like to say that I'm a different choice for the 4th District, especially. You know, I know everybody is kind of pointed towards their Republican or Democratic candidate, but there's a different choice out there, and you should always look at the candidate and the issue as opposed to the party. But it's hard to convince people of that.